Kids. Finn with you on Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB, Stony Brook, until the 9 p.m. hour. Tonight we're going to be speaking with Matt North about his great new record, Bullies in the Backyard, and then Mr. David Heatley talking about his new record, Life Our Way. Pretty cool music, pretty cool chatter. Stay tuned. Right. The Prisoner right here on WUSB Stony Brook, our theme song. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Matt North. He just came out with a really cool, very interesting and cool record called Bullies in the Backyard. And of course, usually when I say interesting, it means not good. But in this particular case, it is good. So it actually is interesting. So yeah. So we're going to be talking to him in a bit. Here's the leadoff track from his new album, Bullies in the Backyard, right here, WUSB Stony Brook.
He's waiting on the clown to pop out of the can. They keep winding him up. He's the last angry man. He hears the window whistle and it whistles. It whistles for him. He hears the thunder clapping and it's clapping. It's clapping for him. And he stops and he starts and he stops. And he stops and he starts and he stops. And he stops and he starts and he stops. He's not waiting on Medusa to look him in the eye. He's not waiting on Bigfoot to come running by. His whole world around him, all he sees is angry men. He's not alone or crazy, just staring out in men. He sees the clouds above. Go ahead and break. They laugh and put him down, put a smile on his face. Thank you. grave. We loved you. It was a home run and a bullseye. You couldn't have done it any better. We're gonna go with the other guy. Maybe next time, maybe next year. So they leave you in the dark. You never knew it hurt so bad. Coming so close and missing the mark. I'll be at the Formosa Cafe. For most of the day, I'll be down in Hollywood forever. Below a wilted bouquet, I'll find my own watering hole. For the head cold in my soul, and they'll keep serving you a mayonnaise sandwich on a silver tray. Red ribbons, silver medals, go better with my hair and I. Like Bobby Knight throwing a chair, I'll take a second place first prize. Bring me flowers, pebbles and stones, I'll be waiting in a place forgot. You know it doesn't hurt so bad, coming so close and missing the plot. I'll be at the Formosa Cafe. For most of the day, I'll be down in Hollywood forever. Below a wilted bouquet, I'll find my own watering hole. For the head cold in my soul, and they'll keep serving you a mayonnaise sandwich on a silver tray. I'll be at the Formosa Cafe. For most of the day, I'll be down in Hollywood forever. Below a wilted bouquet, I'll find my own watering hole. For the head cold in my soul, where I'll be serving you a mayonnaise sandwich. Big fat mayonnaise sandwich. I'll be down in Hollywood under the stars on a silver tray.
Yeah, Matt North from his great new release, Bullies in the Backyard. That was Hollywood Forever. And before that, The Last Angry Man. We're going to be chatting with Matt in just a few moments. And I'm really looking forward to our talk from Nashville. And yeah, so let's hear one more before we give him a call. This is this one's called Trophy Case right here, WUSB Stony Brook.
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. People eating trolls, wearing people disguises. She'll make you work for it, then she'll make you sing. You can see the tan line round her wedding ring. She's a blessed woman with a fortunate life. A very good mom and a terrible wife. Thought you were immune, thought you'd be strong, but all you got was a trophy with your name spelled wrong. Sleeps all day, she bathes in milk. Hunts her prey at night in a robe of silk. Now she never felt a thing, never felt remorse. Said she loves you, but she won't get a divorce. You're a blessed man with a fortunate wife. A solid breadwinner with a terrible life. Thought you were immune, thought you'd be strong. But all you got was a trophy with your name spelled wrong. The hourglass won't flip back over. Too late to close the barn door. Don't wear your diamonds to the grocery store. Yes. Yes. don't freeze. Left you standing all alone with a beard of bees. You'll never stop chasing all that you'll never know. You guess it's easier to stay than to pack up and go. She's a blessed woman with a fortunate life. A very good mom and a terrible wife. Thought you were immune, thought you'd be strong, but all you got was a trophy with your name spelled wrong.
Yeah, pretty cool, right? Trophy Case from brand new record Bullies in the Backyard by Matt North. A really fine, fine new record, and pretty cool stuff. And we're lucky enough right now, I believe, to have Matt North speaking to us. It's live from Nashville. Matt, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me? I'm live from Nashville.
That's great. Apparently, there's not too much a time lag over these digital lines these days.
We're getting lucky.
So this is a real fine new record, and we're gonna talk a lot about the record, obviously. But I wanna talk with you about. Well, first of all, how's the weather right now in Nashville?
You know, I think we got up to about 60 degrees today, so that means tomorrow it's going to be down to 15.
Exactly right. Yeah, we've had a little cold spat here in New York City, so it's yeah.
Right. Did you get up to how many inches? You get the snow, or was that up further north?
Well, we're broadcasting from right now, which is out on Stony Brook on Long Island. They got like 18 to
right.
20. Yeah, and but where I live in Woodside, Queens, got about 8, so not quite as bad, you know. Anyway, exactly. So
just eight.
That's it. Well, 8's, you know. Hey, you guys are in for some weather pretty bad coming up, from what I'm looking at these ridiculous weather predictors. So who knows?
Just whenever we get flurries, they cancel all the schools.
Of course. And no one
it's
goes outside.
Pathetic.
No one goes outside, right.
And all the bread and milk are gone from the groceries. I'm sorry, I'm riffing.
That's quite right. So let's talk a little about your history here. So you're a drummer. And hence the great drum sounds on this record, among other great sounds, but great drum sound. And talk about how you got into music originally when you were a kid.
So it all started definitely with the drums. That was the first instrument that I just sort of naturally took to it. I tried piano, didn't work in my mind, couldn't figure it out. I tried guitar, really wanted to play guitar, but didn't find myself advancing or connecting with it. I sat down behind the drums. Something clicked. I just was mentally able to figure out. I seemed to know what to do up to the point where I was lucky enough to get some really great drum teachers where I grew up. I grew up in Champaign, Illinois.
Okay.
And at the University of Illinois, there's always been a fantastic jazz program that kind of, you know, bred all the great Chicago jazz musicians. They would just go from Champaign and move up to Chicago, and there's a huge connection between the two communities. And I grew up studying drum set from whoever was in the University of Illinois jazz band. And my teachers at a young age started passing legit gigs over to me when I was about 12 or 13 years old. I played, you know, old school, well, bar mitzvahs, wedding receptions, functions, anywhere where they wanted a quartet or a quintet plan. I started working, you know, and so in my mind, I've been working as a musician since I was about 13, and just came up that way. And the community I grew up in, the indie band scene, was really exciting. Champaign, Illinois had there's a guy, Jay Bennett. Now he was in on the first four Wilco albums. He passed away, but I got to be around him and learn a lot from him, play with him, and just the whole scene of being a teenager in garage bands. I feel so fortunate that that's a huge part of my upbringing, you know, just, four teenagers trying to figure it out. How do we do this? What's that chord? What's that sound? How do we write a song? And I've just always been around it. You know, so in a funny way, it's just this combination of maybe garage rock to legit, you know, formal, you know, really studying music from guys who are classically trained and learning the architecture of music as I came up. And, you know, so how far do you want me to go? I'm kind of getting through my teens. And, you know, it's been a wild ride, but that's what I've always, you know, I still see myself, I just see myself as a musician. I can't believe that I'm writing songs at this point. I mean, I love it. It's my new favorite thing. I started writing songs in my 30s, and I started finishing them in my 40s. You just wait till you see what I'm doing in my 70s. It's gonna be cool.
So it sounds like you've had a very well-rounded education there in music. So let me ask you: do you sight read?
I do. I do. I grew up, you know, studying. I played in like a lot of big band jazz growing up, and had to learn how to read charts.
Right.
And, you know, when I was growing up, and in my mind, I knew I wanted to be like a session drummer in New York or L.A. I idolized guys like Jim Keltner and Steve Gadd.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for anyone growing up in the 70s and 80s learning drum set, well, we didn't know how the world was going to change in terms of Pro Tools and digital music. But what the expectation was to be able to walk into a studio and look at a chart and read it and be able to figure out and perform it and play it and record it pretty quickly. So that was part of my training, you know, learning how to read and pull something together and turn ink on a white page into music somehow.
And
so, yeah, that was a huge part.
Yeah, and do you still retain those skills? That's my other question.
Yeah, those are pretty dyed in the wool. Those are dyed in the wool.
Because a common story, you know, is that, you know, I've been out of the sight reading, let's say, game for a while, having to do it on a regular basis. But you still do it a lot?
Right. You know, it's interesting. It was a big part of my education. I lived in Los Angeles for about 13 years and did a lot of work with different songwriters and recording. Mm-hmm. At no point did anyone hand me a sheet of paper and expect me to sight read it. At no point. But now this was when someone could email me an MP3 of their song or their demo, and I was able to listen to it and suss out what I was going to do, and then I'd arrive with all my ideas and we'd rehearse. But it's interesting, you know. I mean, like a lot. By the time I became an adult looking for work, everything about the music industry had in many ways been turned upside down.
Mm.
So, you know, the whole old school approach of reading music or the expectation to either read it or the songwriter to be able to write it. That was different. Folks were recording demos in their home that sounded really good. And it was plenty for me to listen to and follow and be able to come up with an arrangement on the drums.
Right. And obviously all those years playing, able to think on your feet. So if somebody who's hiring you said, no, not that, this, you had it.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to be able to, give the producer what they want and trial and error and adjust and shift in a moment's notice. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's a great skill. Comes with experience.
So you've
put out stuff before yourself. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So let's talk about how you got to your first, first release under your name.
Right. The first record came out in 2017. It's called Above Ground Fools.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a result. I'll tell you how that all started. I got into that record not knowing I was going to make a record. I moved to Nashville in 2010. And, you know, my intention coming here was I was 40 years old when I moved here. In Los Angeles, I was starting to feel like an old drummer. I come to Nashville. Every musician and songwriter I meet who's doing what I strive to do, they were up in their 60s and some up in their 70s, late 50s. Suddenly, I'm a young drummer again in Nashville. It's a different community, a different market here. I met tons of songwriters. The songwriting community in Nashville is like nothing I'd ever experienced before coming from Champaign, Illinois or Los Angeles. And I just decided I really want to get into this. And I had started trying to learn to, you know, write songs and get into it when I lived in Los Angeles. I took a songwriting class with Peter Case, and really learned a lot from that, enough to really start all the trial and errors. And then I moved to Nashville. I started finishing songs and was really feeling excited about that. And had a home studio that I built for drums. And I thought, well, why don't I just start recording my stuff here, see where it goes. And my intention was, hey, I want to get into the publishing game. Maybe I'll record something and find some hotshot singer to go sing it. Mm-hmm. Well, 2-3 songs into it, I start feeling attached. I like how it's sounding. And I felt, no, I want to sing this. I want to sing it all myself. And I got 5 or 6 songs into it, and then you start spinning your wheels. Hey, man, I'm 5 or 4 songs away from a 10-song album. Why not make an album? And that's how that happened. So the first couple songs, I wasn't even thinking it was going to become a release. But I looked back at 5 or 6 songs I'd completed and just decided, hey, why not? Let's see if I can crank out 4 more and put out an independent record and see where it goes. And I did. And, you know, the feedback was really positive, enough encouragement to turn around and make Bullies in the Backyard. So, yeah, that's kind of how it all happened.
Yeah, so that's, once again, it's kind of this natural progression there. That sounds like an adventure, you know?
I feel like it all happened very, honestly, you know, it was fun because even to me, it was a surprise.
Right.
To all my musician allies who have always known me and seen me as a drummer, they're still surprised.
It's great that you surprise yourself. That's a really wonderful thing. The songwriting process for you, it's like, I mean, for somebody who's a comparatively newer songwriter, your lyrics are sharp. You're a quick writer. It's, you know, it sounds quick. It's natural sounding. I'm imagining that when you first got into doing this, as you were saying, was probably a little bit of a struggle in the beginning. And then did something click, or did it just trial and error?
Yeah. It's always trial and error. Something I try to keep humble about is this stuff never gets easy, but I do. The more songs I finish and keep working at it, I develop my own way of working and my own understanding of it. But at no point have I ever sat back in a chair and say, yeah, man, I got it. This is easy. I'm always a little nervous when I talk to songwriters who talk about how quickly they wrote a song or talk about the volume of songs they've written. Yeah, I don't think about numbers. I don't think about how long it takes me to do something. My mindset is, I don't care what I have to go through. All I care about is what I have when I'm done. And I have some songs that, very few of my songs came together, you know, in a 2 or 3 day term. Maybe 3 of them have. The other ones, I just chipped away at them and chipped away at them. But I guess what helped me come together with this was, there was like a 5-year period in my 20s when I was living in Los Angeles, playing drums, working with songwriters, but also really, really interested in screenwriting and film. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a screenplay that it did pretty well in the sense that it won some competitions, it got optioned by different producers, and the film was never produced, but the screenplay itself led me to doing jobs as what's called a script doctor or a script analysis, where I read other people's screenplays, hand back notes. And I got really, really into that whole side of storytelling. And to this day, when I sit down to write songs, I can see, you know, how all of that work, developing skills for telling stories cinematically, has transferred into songwriting. So, you know, maybe I saved a little bit, although I'm coming to this a little later in life after all these years playing drums. I feel like the groundwork has been laid as a writer. I've always been writing, but just transferring those skills into songwriting, you know, it's a new kind of hat you have to put on, but there's so much in common to what a script needs to look like on the page to tell a story of a movie.
Right.
And I kind of see songs as little miniature movies. Hopefully people listen to the songs, and in their mind, this is my favorite part of songwriting. It's really about, it's for the listener once I'm all done writing it. After I'm done and record it and release it, what I think about the song. It doesn't matter anymore. I have fun listening to people who hear the songs and they tell me what it means to them or what images came to their mind. And it's always fun because it's a different story with each person.
Hmm. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the screenwriting in Los Angeles, of course. You know the old joke, right? All you have to do is walk down the street in Los Angeles and say, how's your screenplay coming to a stranger? And they will go and start to tell you how it's coming.
Oh, and they'll tell you, yeah, you could throw a rock up in the air right. And it's going to fall down on someone with a screenplay in their back pocket.
Exactly. But that's great. That's great. And those are all great skills. And plus you had the songwriting background working with so many great songwriters and all that. Now, when you actually sit down and write, do lyrics come first or an idea for lyrics come first? Or how does it work? Music or is it mixed?
I've experienced both. I'd say it's mixed, but if I had to lean toward one, it starts with words.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of my songs took different shapes and forms before I handed out the final recorded version. But something I do that I feel might be a little unique, different than most songwriters, and I try to pretend it's my secret weapon to get, I'll get a set of lyrics down. And the first thing I do, is go sit down behind a drum set and kind of approach it like I'm Levon Helm or, you know, a drummer that sings. And I will sit behind the drum set, just me and the drums, and sing the song. And in my imagination, I can hear the chords of whatever the chords should be and where it's going. And I work out the groove and the rhythm that's going to support the vocals. I'm a guy who grew up loving how Ringo Starr drums, and I also love how Charlie Watts drums. When you listen to Ringo, his style of drumming created, he follows the vocal. When you listen to Charlie Watts, he follows Keith Richards.
Right.
So I guess I kind of maybe approach it in a Ringo way where I'm behind the drums, but I'm the vocalist and I'm singing, and I'm finding that what I feel is that perfect groove that's right on the money that the song needs, and that's what helps me find it. Then I go to a piano or a guitar, and I play guitar and piano. I always say I play them well enough to write a song. I'm not a hot shot who can go to a blues jam and knock everybody out. That's the process for me, because so much of a song's success, you can take a perfectly written song and record it with the wrong drum groove or the wrong drummer. And in my opinion, it's over at that point. You know, a really great drummer can turn an average song into something well above average.
Right.
You can take a great band, but have a below average drummer, and they're not going to sound as good as the below average band with a great drummer. Right. So, you know, anyway.
No, in fact, of course, that's the case. The drummer is the we have a million, as I'm sure you've heard them all, but a million jokes about drummers. But it's But the drummer is truly the most integral part of any kind of band that really is clicking and working. So
it's the drummer jokes. I mean, you know, on one hand, they're always really funny, and on the other hand, they're typically completely off base as it relates to how good of musicians drummers are who drum for the song and they play for the whole big picture.
Right.
You know, and we all feel music fans are all exhausted and impatient with drummers who need a lot of attention. I don't like that kind of drumming and never responded to that. Again, I was so lucky to come up as a drummer with great songwriters who coached me, told me what they wanted, and told me when I was not doing what the song needed, you know. So that's really what's built me.
We are talking to Matt North, and we're talking to him about his brand new record, Bullies in the Backyard, which we'll be hearing more from at the end of this interview. And of course, the podcast will be up tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and you guys know where to find it. If you don't, you can just Google Finn's Revolution podcast, and you'll be there. Let's get to the other factor. When you're building the music, I mean, pretty much, do you lay down drums first, or do you lay it down as a band, or do you play everything?
Well, for this, for my first two records, it's been drums first. And usually in the recording process, rhythm section goes down first, right, no matter what you do. And anyone who's interested in recording, you know, you see these documentaries and this and that. Yeah, the vocalist always gets to come in last, and the guitarists get, goodness, guitarists get to sit there and play for weeks just to do one solo. It drives me nuts. You know, but, you know, now I put the drums down first. I've got a studio at home, and I usually do a really bad scratch guitar track by me and piano, so that when I'm drumming, I'm actually listening to something real, some music. And I do a reference temporary vocal. So I'll have like a little demo of guitar and vocal or piano and vocal. Mm-hmm. And then I just go in like it's like I've been called into a session. And I record drums that way. And I've got some nerdy little my whole thing is if I can't hit a drum take in five takes, then I've got no business recording on that day. I did something wrong. I didn't rehearse enough. I haven't thought things through. And I just get up and leave and come back another day. But usually I can get what I need pretty quickly. Mostly because I'm the guy who wrote the song, and I know what it needs, and I've rehearsed, you know. But, yeah, you know, that's the thing. Drums go down first. And I always say, if you've got that, that's your foundation. That's the you can build any house on top of that. Once you get a really great drum track, you can go any direction from that, and it's going to sound like a really good recording, like everyone was in the room at the same time, which is good. But there's pros and cons to doing it both ways.
Yeah, well, you can certainly nail it a little better when it's overdubbed tracks and stuff like that. But yeah,
right.
Now, With this record, with Bullies in the Backyard, when was this recorded?
I think it's been recorded
pre-pandemic.
It started pre-pandemic, and I was actually going into it thinking, man, I'm going to get all the guys on this record, and we're going to go in one day and do everything in one day as a band, and then boom, COVID hit, and it became, you know, one of these pandemic albums where I did everything I could do at my studio, and I'd send the stuff out to the guys in the band. And something interesting about this record is it's a core band of guys on all 10 songs. My first record, Above Ground Fools, it was almost that way, but it was done very Nashville, you know, kind of different Nashville session musicians. Whoever was available and appropriate for the song was called in. A lot of different kinds of talent on that record. But this one, I went in knowing I was going to make an album, which is different than my first album. And what I did make a decision with, pandemic or not, was song to song, there's going to be a cohesiveness. It's Chris Donahue on bass. He regularly plays in Emmylou Harris's band. He's worked with Robert Plant and Elvis Costello. Michael Webb is the keyboardist on every song. He's been on all the Sturgill Simpson and Chris Stapleton records. He toured a number of years with John Fogerty. And I feel this album, the special voice of the album, is Stuart Mathis on guitar, who for the last 11 years has been seen with Lucinda Williams. And before that, he was in the Wallflowers with Jacob Dylan. And Stuart, in my mind, I just always want to say in every interview I do, if David Bowie was alive looking for someone to join his band and he heard Stuart Mathis and worked with Stuart and saw how Stuart approaches the guitar, I think Bowie would want to hire Stuart. Stuart, in my way of thinking, reminds me so much of things that Earl Slick and Mick Ronson did in the 70s with Bowie. And there's just that character to the way Stuart plays guitar. I can't think of anyone else that plays like him or sounds like him, and that's what I love.
Yeah, I was going to mention the guitar playing on the record. Quite cool, quite outstanding. Now, let me ask you, did you keep any keeper tracks of your own guitar-wise on these?
I did not. I was
okay, right. You're a smart man.
No, I just didn't. You know, my whole thing is, why should it be me if I can just pay someone to do it on an expert level?
Right.
You know, if I have one talent, it's that I know who to hire, and I'm really good at hiring the right people. And I love talent. I love discovering talent and marveling at other people's talent and how they can uplift this little blueprint that I created called a song. I mean, there's no such thing as a solo album. And all I did was write the stuff, you know? Mm. And yeah, that wasn't easy. But in the end, so what? You know, it's these guys who come in and they put their stamp on it and they put their interpretation to it. And again, back to surprises, what's fun for me is all these musicians I worked with, they brought something to it that I never would have imagined myself. And that's why I want them.
Hmm. Talk a little about the, beside yourself, a little about the production team on this record. Because as we were talking the talent of laying down drums, is in your abilities and feeling the groove and knowing what works for a song is fantastic. But if it doesn't sound good, that's a whole thing.
Right.
The drum sound on this record is really incredible throughout. You want to talk a little about that?
Well, it's maybe a two-part process. All I do on my end is I record everything. I spend more time tuning my drums than I spend tracking my drums.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
I can probably get a good drum track done in under 20 minutes. It's 30 minutes or so, but I spend a lot of time like getting the toms and the snare and everything to sound right. I have a great room, it's a one car garage with 17 foot vaulted ceilings and cedar surrounding the walls and all this stuff that you'd see in, studios. So I get a great sound recorded. Well, after that, it's about who's going to mix the drums.
Right.
And, back to my talent of knowing who to hire. I got Jim Scott to mix this record, and Jim Scott is the guy who won the Grammy for Tom Petty's Wildflowers. Mm. He's recorded and mixed Wilco, Los Lobos, the Rolling Stones, and just through a personal connection, actually, Johnny Polonsky, who is now a New York musician and by way of Chicago, and we grew up as kids in the same music scenes in Illinois, and Johnny has had an amazing career as a songwriter, and he lives in Manhattan now. And I called him up. I was looking for someone to mix this record. He had worked with Jim Scott before, thought Jim was perfect. Luckily, Jim Scott was available because he's always booked. And I contacted Jim in maybe late May of last year. He had 1 week available in August. And I flew out to Los Angeles and got to sit next to Jim Scott and mix a record. And I'll tell you what, I learned more in 7 days than 7 years of college. That's right, I just said 7 years of college. And, you know, this is a guy who was a part of albums that mattered to me when I was growing up. Wow. You know, he recorded and engineered Sting's very first album after The Police broke up. He did Dream of the Blue Turtles, and I grew up loving the way Omar Hakim plays drums and those drum sounds. And you know, there I was with the guy who did Tom Petty's Wildflowers, which was a life-changing record for me. And, you know, I just think in the end it gets down to making records. I feel like I want my albums to sound like my heroes. I want my albums to sound like the records that mattered to me when I was 15 years old. And he did it. He got that sound. I don't want to sound like a retro album, but rock and roll from the 1970s is still pretty much what I reach for and listen to. I have a 17-year-old son, so he keeps me up to date on what's going on that's new. But I don't know. You know, it's where I come from. It's just good old American rock and roll. And,
but the sound, that has happened there is extremely updated. But I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
right, right. Yeah. So I got lucky getting Jim, and I want him to do the next record for sure.
So once again, we are talking to Matt Northen about his brand new, very fine record, "Bullies in the Backyard," which you're going to hear more of in just a few moments. Now let's talk a little because I found this aspect fascinating, and I'm sure you've been talking about it and stuff. Let's talk about your family situation with schools in Nashville. Do you mind talking about that?
I don't mind at all. Not at all.
Okay. Tell us a little of the background of the case that wound up happening. How'd you get involved?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My son was born in 2004, and we knew very early on that he was not hitting benchmarks and milestones that we were seeing in other children of our peers. And we didn't know if he was autistic, Asperger's. We were doing all kinds of tests. No one could tell us anything. To get to the bottom line of what my son's challenges were, he was truly a one in a billion case. He was born with a genetic deletion in his DNA that impacts his learning in areas of communication, receiving and expressing communication, and he's math disabled. The briefest, clearest explanation about my son's condition is a geneticist explained to me, okay, your DNA is like your body's instruction manual to know what to do while it's developing. Your son was born with several pages missing in his instruction manual, and they're never going to come back. So it's a day-by-day, month-to-month process of just watching how he develops and figuring out what he needs to learn. Long story short, our family's challenges are nothing new. We're a puddle in the ocean of what I consider a national problem of children with learning differences receiving the education that they're entitled to. And that happened to us trying to get my son an appropriate education in the public school system. And what led us to a legal case was every child in our country is entitled to a free, appropriate public education. And students with specific learning disabilities that are identified clinically by experts are entitled to services to help them receive an appropriate education. We moved to Nashville in 2010 after having a lot of challenges already with school districts in Los Angeles and slowly learning, like, man, we're kind of in a strange little culture in a world here. I always say no one in the disability community chose to be in the disability community. We were all thrust into it. Maybe you're an adult who's been fine with no issues your life. You get in a car accident, and you know, that thrusts someone into the disability community, or you're born with a situation. After 3 years of trying to make it work in Nashville public schools, and it was bad from the start. It was contentious for 3 years. He was not being given what he needed. And, you know, it all gets down to money, you know, budget and money. But even so, without getting down in the weeds about all the things in our case, we were able to expose about 17 federal violations. And we had to take it through the state first. That's the first place you have to start. Well, we ended up in doing a 9-day trial, our family versus Nashville Public Schools. And we lost the first round. We lost on the state level. Pretty easy to understand. It was a Metro City Nashville judge judging Metro City Nashville schools. And I kind of saw the writing on the wall with that. And but we had such a good, strong case. We knew if we appealed this up to the federal courts, it was going to be different. And we did, and it was different. The whole timeline of this case was 7 years, largely because there was a 2-year waiting period for nothing, because this was right around the time Mitch McConnell was not confirming President Obama's nominees for justices. And in Nashville, like when we started our federal appeal, two justices retired and there was one sitting federal judge, and everyone just had to get in line and wait. And finally, things started moving up in the queue. They confirmed two new judges and our case finally was getting reviewed. Well, by now it's 2018 and we filed. Wow. We filed in 2013. And this just went a very long time. The lawyers were turning in 90-page briefs. In some respect, I've been going on and on for 10 minutes now. I could go on for another hour and still not get into the details of what this case was about. But fortunately, we were simply able to prove that based on my son's diagnosis and what he needs in order to learn, the public school system in Nashville, and giving due credit that there's plenty of children with disabilities in Nashville public schools who are receiving an appropriate education, but those are different kids, not Mike. Based on my son's needs, we were able to prove that they can't provide an appropriate education. And when you can prove that, schools have to relocate your child to an appropriate private school setting. And my son, since third grade, has been going to the Curry Ingram Academy in Nashville, Tennessee, which is kind of a beacon for what schools could be for young learners with learning differences. And just broad strokes, you know, my son as a kid, we were told he's likely never going to get beyond fifth grade math, probably never going to learn how to read. Well, he's a junior in high school. He just got inducted into the National Honor Society. He just got an A in geometry for his first semester grade as a junior. And he can read. He's reading independently. He reads for leisure. You know, it's all about getting kids what they need early. I've had, you know, quite a bit of arguments about this, and they're the folks who react strongly, or those are my taxpayer dollars.
Of course.
Going to your, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, here's my argument against that. The bottom line for me is, hey, let's spend our taxpayer dollars on individuals with disabilities when they're young and developing so that they can become adults who don't require any government funding.
Right.
My point is, I feel we would save hundreds, thousands, millions of dollars, because right now we have adults with disabilities who didn't get what they needed when they were developing, and they're still dependent.
Right.
Whereas I believe my son, he's going to be okay. He got what he needed while he was developing. He's learned how to be independent. He's going to be self-sufficient. He's going to make an incredible adult. He's going to make a lot of employers very happy. And I don't believe we're going to be taking or requiring any taxpayer dollars when he's an adult.
Right. Some investment in the young times really pays off in the long term. So, and that goes for every child.
You know? Yeah, that's my whole point. That was my whole point with this case, you know, because he's an only child, and all of his cousins and relatives, they live out in California where his mother grew up. And, you know, my question, and this is pretty blunt, was, hey, when his grandparents aren't here anymore, and when his mother and I aren't here anymore, and he's an adult and he was an only child, what's going to take care of him?
Right.
Well, the answer, his education. His education is what's going to take care of him.
Right.
You know, I don't want government funding to take care of him. I don't want a sibling to have to take care of him. I want him to be independent, and I want his education to do everything we can do so that when he's 60 years old, he's going to be fine.
That's great. Congratulations on those victories and putting your child and family first. Now, one of the things I also wanted to bring up about this is that this plays, I mean, obviously it plays a big role in your life, but explain how it affects your music. Can you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Every single song on Bullies in the Backyard came from some point of that 7-year process where everything was very stressful and contentious. And I'm happy to say, you know, we're not listening to 10 songs about special education.
Right.
I don't know how rock and roll that would be. I don't know how marketable that would be. But my thing is, you know, I was writing and recording this record, in addition to some of the songs that ended up on Above Ground Fools, it just became this respite, this escape for me. You know, I really had to make our case for my son the number one focus of my life. I did not shop myself in Nashville to, you know, the whole world, you can audition and maybe go on a tour. I took that off the table and decided, which was another motive, to just focus on songwriting. And so songwriting became this thing that I did that really helped keep me sane and calm, and collect my thoughts, and to take all this crap I was feeling and struggling with and just put it down on paper and see what I can do with it. I hate to say make lemonade out of lemons, but that's what I was trying to do. And yeah, you know, I mean, to even name one, like the song Stay on the Outside, it's the message is stay on the outside and shoot in. I wrote that thinking of my son being a kid who is an outsider, who's different, who may suffer from feeling like he's not in the in crowd. And I always got advice from a guy I respected in Los Angeles about how to be in the music industry. And he just said, here's the secret, man. Stay on the outside and shoot in. And I totally understood what he meant. And, you know, socially and emotionally for my son, I give him that same advice. You know, don't try to, these people who are in the in crowd, the popular kids, tell you what, their time of glory is on a ticking clock and it ends when they turn 19. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits to staying on the outside and shooting in. And so just that whole mindset turned into a song.
Yeah. So we've been talking to Matt North. Matt, we've heard the first three songs on the record. Would you like to pick a song that we can go out with?
Oh, wow. Let's see. You've heard the first three songs. That would mean...
Last Angry Man.
I'll tell you what. Hollywood Forever, and then Trophy Case.
Yep.
Let's go into track five, Holding It Together, which features my dear pal, Jesse DiNatale, showing up in background vocals. And I just, Jesse DiNatale, I've played drums for him for a number of years when he'd play in L.A. In my mind, one of the best living artists today. A very special guy. If he was a guy, one of these guys, if he was pursuing a record deal in 1971, they would have picked him over Van Morrison. Stone Cold Blank, you know. And anyway, I'm thrilled that we got to sing a song together, Holding It Together.
All right. Now, where can people get a hold of the album right now? It's not out till next week officially, or it's out now? Oh, it's out on the 11th.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Right now, folks can find me on Bandcamp, and they can order a physical CD if they want one. However, I had to make those just for the publicist. I'm kind of wondering, well, these CDs make great coasters and shims.
That's right.
And by the way, you can listen to them. But the record's out February 11th everywhere online, iTunes. You know, not a popular week to say it'll be on Spotify, but you know what? I don't have the same leverage. I don't have the same leverage as Neil Young. And boy, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not a fan of Joe Rogan. I'm not a fan of this whole Spotify thing. But, you know, hey, I got to do what I got to do. They can stream it on Spotify, and I'll get 0.0038 cents per stream, which that's the problem. Let's quit talking about Joe Rogan. That's the problem with Spotify.
Of course. There's a great T-shirt that said, this T-shirt cost me my 1,300,000 listens that I received, you know, on Spotify.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so can people go to mattnorth.net and get some links to stuff?
Yes, they can. That's kind of the central hub. Anything you
Perfect.
Need, you can take care of it there. That'll direct people to all the places.
So that is up on our playlist right now at WUSB.FM, so you guys can click that and check out some stuff. Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And I knew it would be, and this podcast will be up tomorrow. I'll send you a link to it so you can post it as well. And
fantastic.
Great to talk to you, and best of luck with everything, my friend.
Thank you, Finn. It's been a pleasure. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Great talking to you.
All right, man.
Right below the surface, where a landmine sits, one wrong move, and it'll blow us all to bits. I've been bumping into things, I've been spilling all my drinks, my gutter's overflowing, and I watch while the foundation sinks. I've been laying low,
I've been laying low.
I blame it on the weather,
blame it on the weather.
I don't want anyone to know I'm over here trying to hold it together. I kill them all with kindness, somehow they come back from the dead. So I keep killing them with kindness. It's better for my head. I reinvented, reinvented, but I still have the same face. My hindsight is 50-50, and I always end up back in the same place. I've been laying low.
I've been laying low.
The spell is going on forever.
The spell is going on forever.
I don't want anyone to know. I'm over here trying to hold it together. I've been turned down, turned away, turned off, turned blue. Held it together for too long until it broke off and shattered in two. Man, I've had it with this scene. Where all the insults are hurled. Think I'm cutting out of the circus. I think I'll run off and join the world. I've been laying low.
I've been laying low.
But nothing lasts forever.
Nothing lasts forever.
And when I got nowhere to go, I'll be over here trying to hold. Before I get too old, I'm over here, here,
here,
holding it all together.
Yeah, Matt North and his buddies there, plus Jesse DiNatale on background vocals, harmony vocals. And from the new album, Bullies in the Backyard by Matt North. And you can get more information on the upcoming record, which is out on the 11th, at mattnorth.net. You can just click the link on the playlist. And, of course, you can hear the podcast of this interview and the music tomorrow evening, on Wednesday night, at Finn's Revolution Podcast. Just Google that and you will be there.